After years on the road, Toomey parked the van and picked up the mic to bring you this podcast that features interviews with people from hardcore to hair metal. This is Talk Toomey with your host, Joshua Toomey.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Talk To Me, episode 50. Yes, we've made it to 50, and my special guest today is Jason T. Smith of Thrifty Business with J&A, formerly of Thrift Hunters, which was on Spike TV. Great friend of mine and always a great guest to have on the podcast. So let's get to some sponsors so we can get to our show. And guys, if you follow me on Facebook, you follow me on Twitter, you just saw that I posted a photo of myself and the legendary Vinnie Paul, formerly of Pantera, now of Hell Yeah, and I was wearing my sweet puck hockey tee, my 36 Crazy Fish shirt, and while I was at the Hell Yeah show, I had a couple people come up to me and just compliment me on how cool of a shirt it was. And then also I had a guy come up to me and was like, man, is that a puck hockey shirt? And I'm like, well, yes, it is. And I told him all about puck hockey and told him about the podcast and all that wonderful stuff. So puck hockey is out there and people are definitely checking it out and think it's great stuff. So head over to puckhockey.com, P-U-C-K-H-C-K-Y.com. Shop until you drop. And when you get to just checkout, make sure to enter TALK, that's T-A-L-K for my listeners, for an additional 10% off your entire order. Yes, TALK, T-A-L-K. For 10% off your entire order. The Talk To Me podcast is also brought to you by the Talk To Me t-shirt. Make sure to head on over to Amazon.com. Search out Talk To Me. Get yourself a Talk To Me t-shirt. They come in men's sizes, women's sizes, and even kid sizes, so you can outfit the entire family in Talk To Me tees. They're only $20 and free shipping with Amazon Prime, so get one today because Amazon writes me a nice little check each and every time you get yourself a Talk To Me tee, and it helps out the podcast tremendously.
Hey, this is Jim Brewer, and thanks for listening to the Talk To Me podcast. Not you, Talk To Me!
All right, guys, it's now time for some shout-outs for sharing, and that's shout-outs for sharing the podcast on Facebook and Twitter. So when you see this podcast show up in your Facebook feed, your Twitter timeline, make sure to hit that share button, hit that retweet button, and get your name read on a future episode of the Talk To Me podcast. So the last couple episodes, the shout-outs go to Rico Kohler, Joel Baggett, Andy Hott and Zero King, Donnie Greenwell, Sean Reinhart, Casey Sweet, Scott Bowling, Scott Sullivan, Mr. Billy Gray, Adam Slitter PR, Elias Suriano of Anon Point. How cool is that? And Rob Rivera also shared the Rob Rivera episode of the podcast. And also Eric Hall and the Shoot the Shred podcast. Trav and As the Story Grows podcast. Rich Ward of Stuck Mojo and Fozzy retweeted both of the last two episodes of the podcast. How cool is that? At Groover 2070. Just in Time, Potter and Family, and then also the Nonpoint account also retweeted the podcast. So it's super cool, and a lot of great names are sharing the podcast. So if you would like your name read on a future episode of the Talk To Me podcast, make sure and hit that share and retweet button. So I'd said earlier that I went to see Hell Yeah. I saw Hell Yeah on Tuesday, and then we went and saw Seven Dust and the Westfield Massacre on Wednesday. So I'm going to give you my Seven Dust Westfield Massacre story first. I'm going to save the Hell Yeah shenanigans for next week because I don't want to give all of my stories away all at once. So, man, I have to say, and this goes out to Tommy Vex and the Westfield Massacre for making my son's first concert so memorable. And I'm about to tell you one of the coolest stories. And if you've seen the video on the Talk To Me podcast page or my personal Facebook page, it's so cool. And it was so nice. So I got two tickets through the PR people because of Seven Dust being on the podcast. Called a friend. He couldn't make it. So I decided to take my son. My son Blake, who is 10 years old, never gone to a concert before. I figured Seven Dust concert would be okay. The night before was Hell Yeah. I saw some kids there and I was like, you know what? I'm going to take Blake to see his first concert. So we stopped. You know, we stopped at the Dollar General store. I got him some hair gel for his hair, made him put on a cool outfit before we left the house. And I was like, man, all the girls are going to think you're so cute and all this other stuff. And he was pretty into the whole idea of going to a concert. So we get to the show, we get our tickets, we get in. And immediately, man, this guy walks over to him and just like kind of gives him like a rub on his head, like a, hey there, you little guy. And I'm like, who the hell are you to touch my son? And, you know, at a concert, and the guy like freaked out, and like the very bad way to start the concert, very bad way to start the interaction with him. And Blake even later on was like, you know, why did that guy touch me? And I'm like, I have no idea. It was such a weird situation. But so, you know, he was kind of freaked out to begin with. We get to the show and he immediately has some issue with the guy. And then Dad has an issue with the guy. So it just turns out to be really odd. So first band goes on. Or the first band was on when we got there. We saw a few songs, and then halfway, you know, between that band and the Westfield Massacre, Tommy Vext walks by, and I'm like, hey, Tommy, Josh Toomey, Talk To Me podcast. You were on my podcast a while back, and he's like, oh, man, it's so great to finally meet you in person. Would you like to watch the show from the side of the stage? And I'm like, hell yeah, I would love to. That'd be great. So Blake and I walked backstage, walk up to the side of the stage, and we're sitting there waiting for them to finish setting up, and Tommy's like, hey, Blake, do you want to come out and say hi to the crowd? Do you want to say, hey, you know, make some noise for the Westfield Massacre? And Blake was like, yeah, that sounds great. That sounds like a lot of fun. So Tommy's like, all right, after the third song, I'm going to come back and get you. And Blake was like, that's great. So the Westfield Massacre starts. Great bands. Like, I'm not even saying that just because Tommy was on the podcast and how cool he was to Blake. Just a great all overall band. And about, you know, third song finishes. Tommy walks back, and then this happens. So that was awesome of Tommy Vext having him out there. And after the show, we go back out in the crowd, and all the people are walking up to him, talking to him about how great of a job he did. And it was kind of fun. It was a first show out there, and he finally got to see kind of what Dad's World was all about. And he ended up talking to a lot of people, and everybody was telling him how cool he was and how great it was and telling him a good job and all that fun stuff. So we walked back to the merch booth, and Blake took a photo with Tommy Vext, like his new best friend. And Blake's love of the Westfield Massacre now is so hilarious. Like, he just listens to that CD all the time, and was telling me about how great the show was afterwards. And the other thing that happened right after that, we were by the merch booth talking to Tommy. We got done with all that, and we were kind of waiting on the next band, Like a Storm from New Zealand. They were about to come on, and a lady came up to us, asked us if we were with the tour, and we said no. And she got down and talked to Blake, and she was like, you did such a great job up there. And she was holding a clipboard, and she was like, would you guys like to go to the VIP area? And I was like, okay. So she took us upstairs to this nice VIP area, gave us the wristbands that said we were VIPs, and gave us these two cushy, like, movie theater style seats for the rest of the show. So we get upstairs, and I was like, wow, Blake. I was like, you're famous now. And he looked at me, and he goes, no, Dad, now we're both famous. And that, you know, like, really just tugged at the heartstrings, because, you know, there's nothing like a statement like that from your kid to make you feel special. But we watched the rest of the show from up there. Seven Dust came out, and I've never heard them sound so good. Seven Dust sounded so good, such a great live band. Blake was dozing off a few songs into it. He was getting rough, and it was a school night, so we stayed for about half the set, and then I had to get him out of there, be the responsible dad that I am, and get him home and get him back in bed so that he could go to school the next day and tell the kids how cool he was at the Westfield Massacre / Seven Dust show. So in spirit of that, I'm going to let you guys hear a Westfield Massacre song. The song is called Build Your Thrones. It's out on Urban Yeti Records, so go and get a copy now.
Don't you know who the fuck
And again, thanks to Tommy Vex of the Westfield Massacre for making my son's first concert such a great experience. And if you want to support that, go and download, legally download the new Westfield Massacre album. Such a great album. Also, like I said before, it's out on Urban Yeti Records. So go check it out. And if you want to go back to episode 10 with Tommy Vex of the Westfield Massacre on the Talk To Me podcast, it's always fun. Also with the show, I got to talk to LeJean for just a moment while the Westfield Massacre was on. He kind of stopped by. I was like trying to scream to him over the music that he was on the show. He kind of vaguely understood what the hell I was talking about. You know, he was very nice and cordial, but I don't think he understood. I don't think he knew who I was at the moment. So it was kind of bad, but you know, I kind of wish I could have talked to him a little bit more, but I didn't get a chance to. But like I said, my little interaction with him was great. A lot of fun to see him out and just a fun show all around, man. They Seven Dust put on such an amazing live performance, and I kind of wish I could have seen it all, but had to be the good dad and get out of there and go home. And now onto the guest of honor this week. It's Jason T. Smith, the return of Jason T. Smith. Such a cool guest to have on the podcast. I love following everything that he does on Thrifty Business with J&A. He does a lot of great live Facebook videos about, you know, thrifting and things like that. And I know the show is mainly about music, mainly about metal, but my other passion in life is antiques and thrifting and garage sales and all that other fun stuff. And I've always been into that. I've always been into, you know, when I was on tour with Primer 55 or 12 Volt Negative Earth or whatever band I was out on tour with, if there was an antique store near the club or any kind of a flea market near the club, I would go and check it out and, you know, send stuff home if I had to. It was always a lot of fun to be out on tour and checking stuff like that out. And Jason, you know, he has a thrifting background, but he also has a music background. And we go into a lot of stories about Slayer, Slipknot, Mushroom Head, Gwar, Five Finger Death Punch, Tenacious D. You know, he runs the gamut of all this stuff. A lot of fun talk on this one. So hopefully you guys will enjoy this episode. And make sure and go and check out Jason. He's got a lot of great upcoming events. And let me see. Let me pull up where he's going. Upcoming events, June 3rd, live Thrifty Business with J&A, the YouTube show from the Philly AIDS Thrift Store in Philadelphia. That is sold out. June 4th, Thrifting Class in North Philly with J&A is sold out. June 6th, Thrifting Class in Pittsburgh with Jay, two spots available. Let's see, June 8th, Thrifting Class in Cleveland sold out. June 9th, speaking in Port Huron about how to have the best garage sale. And that's looks like a lot of fun. June 10th, Thrifting Class in Detroit area with Jay, spots available. And June 11th, huge community garage sale in Port Huron. He will be hanging out at the garage sale and finding a lot of great deals. So hopefully at that garage sale, you need to make sure and get to the garage, get to all the sales before Jason does, because he will go through there and wipe them all out. But, you know, like I said, go and check him out. Check out Jason. He's a lot of fun. Always loved his TV show, Thrift Hunters, when it was on. And like I said, we talk about it at the end of this episode, but, you know, he came on way back episode, I guess, 12. And I had been talking to him since like episode 6. And he, you know, checked out the podcast, really liked what I was doing and came on. And I didn't know him from anything. I was just reaching out to him because I thought he was a cool person. And throughout the past year or so, you know, him and I have stayed friends and we continue to talk. And it was such a cool guest to have and, you know, an honor to have him come on to episode 50. And I'm just so, you know, just I'll take a moment now and talk about episode 50. But, you know, looking back on the last 50 episodes of this podcast, I'm so excited to be where I am, where I'm at. So many great guests. You know, like I said, Jim Brewer, God, what a cool guest to have. And the dudes from Stuck Mojo and, you know, Rich Ward, Frank Fonseray, Bones even coming on. And then, you know, Billy Gray in the mix and so many cool dudes. Like Dave Ellefson of Megadeth was on my podcast. If you had told 14-year-old little Toomey that Dave Ellefson one day would be on the podcast, that's so crazy. You know, Mark Rizzo, Tony Campos. I'm going to leave out so many people, so many cool guests because I'm just going off the top of my head. You know, even Rob Rivera, man, I've always been a huge Nonpoint fan. Such a cool guest to have, doing a nice Nick Menza remembered episode like we did last week. You always have to, remember your heroes and do the best you can. So thank you to everyone who has been checking out the podcast, who stayed with me through all these 50 episodes and, reached out to me, said hello, sent a nice kind word. I love reading all of those. And, I got a lot of great messages over the week and, you know, just leave a nice iTunes review, you know, message me on Facebook. I respond to everybody and I will talk to you guys on the internets. And you can reach me facebook.com/talktometalk, Twitter is at TalkToMeTalk. And if you want to send the show an email directly, it's TalkToMeTalk@gmail.com. But now, on to our guest on episode 50, Mr. Jason T. Smith.
Hey, everybody. This is David Allison from Megadeth, and you're listening to the Talk to Me podcast.
Jason T. Smith, welcome back to the Talk to Me podcast.
Thanks for having me back, Toomey. How are you?
Life's been good, man. Life's been good. It's been a while. But no, I was actually, we were just kind of talking about Nick Menza from Megadeth passing, and you always post on your thrifting board, you know, dead celebrity kind of alerts, and I kind of wondered about that today, like how much Megadeth stuff was moved on eBay today.
Yeah, you know, I was busy all day. Our house is getting painted, and it's about 2 years overdue. And that, when you live in the desert, that is a big deal. It's not so much when you live in the Midwest, but when you live in the desert, everything just dries out, and so I spent the entire day starting to take down decorations and move everything. And I saw the news, and I haven't had a chance to check. And not that he's a big deal, but I try and teach people it's not just everybody who dies that he has that has a, you know, just a smidge right. of, you know, one of the guys that was one of the original Beastie Boys and they were a punk band died the other day, and it got posted like 20 times. I'm like, look, this is going to sound callous, but he's not a big deal.
Right.
You know, I think his claim to fame was he coined the term Beastie Boys, but no one in the world knows him as a Beastie Boy. So to make a big deal about that, it just, there was going to be no uptick in Beastie Boy stuff. You know, one of the three dies, or well, now one of the two dies. Yeah. But like, you know, Prince was a big deal. Now with the Megadeth stuff, I don't know. I haven't looked. I've been in the garage cleaning all day. Not as like, fun and as exciting thing I like to do, but you know, that's what happens when you're an adult and you own a house. You got to do shit like that.
Yeah, I think with him, though, it was more of, you know, he was kind of a part of that classic Rust in Peace, Countdown to Extinction lineup. So, I mean, I know my Facebook feed today was just absolutely blowing up. And I know I ended up, you know, going to Google Play and downloading a few extra tracks today. So I'm sure they're music-wise, I'm sure that they got a few more, Spotify listens and Google Play downloads and iTunes downloads.
Yeah, and if anybody did, you know, if anybody was selling something from his era, you know, they would have been wise. Or if you hear this and it's you still have something, you would be wise to get him in the title, because I'm guessing you don't have him in the title because that's not normally what you would focus on. But when somebody passes from a band, especially a classic band and a classic lineup, you know, that's the time to profile the drummer, so to speak.
Profile the drummer.
Yeah.
So with 2016 kind of just taking all the artists, I mean, has it been just a huge surge in artist related materials online?
Oh yeah, it's been crazy. I mean, I just, in all my years, I don't remember anything quite like the last, you know, 12 months. It's just been a bizarro world of a major rock and pop and every genre star passing away. It's a crazy run. And you know, when famous people die, no matter if it's music or sports or movies and TV, but you know, there's that arc. And you know, China the Wrestler is the modern day Farrah Fawcett, because Farrah Fawcett died the same day as Michael Jackson and no one remembers. And then China dies, and you know, people started to mourn China, and then I was a big wrestling fan, and boom, Prince dies. So you know, China, she's gone. Like nobody's thinking about it. So I mean, there's so many, they're just bumping into each other too. That's what's crazy. Just as you get done mourning one, another one pops up, and it's just been a horrible year for pop stars. And I use that term to cover everyone. I don't mean to call, you know, Scott Weiland a pop star or Prince, but, you know, it's just a general term.
So what's the kind of the big thing online right now? What's going on? What's blowing up the eBay sales? What type of items right now?
Well, you know, obviously with Prince, you know, just a weird timing. I've been a Prince fan, probably my favorite artist of all time. And so I had amassed a quite hefty vinyl collection and CD collection, including, besides the normal releases, a lot of promos, a lot of bootlegs, a lot of rare imports. And, I don't have room for my huge vinyl collection anymore. So at my feet, I have a little downstairs desk I work at night. when I watched TV with my wife, but at my feet were two huge tubs of Prince vinyl that had sat there for 4 months. And I'm like, I got to get to this stuff because it's worth good money. And then boom, he dies. I'm like, oh, I have to get to it today. So, I listed all that, and then I looked through my CDs, and you know, and here's the key to selling and dead people stuff. And I got into a couple fights with people in my group because they just don't get it. They said, "Well, I'm not selling my memories." I'm like, "The music is your memory. Rip it to your iTunes, but that CD that you say is your memory is today worth $200. Now here's the deal: in about 4 months, the price will be back to normal, and everyone in my group is a thrifter. You've got a good chance of finding it anyway. But I said, look, the week Michael died, there was such a demand. I sold a used Thriller CD for $60. You can buy that same Thriller used CD today on eBay for about $6.
That's insanity.
And that'll happen with Prince stuff too. But I'm like, look, you won't find a bigger fan, but I'm also a shrewd businessman that I know that it's never going to be worth more than it is right this moment. And between that vinyl and the CDs, I did like $3,000 or $4,000 in about 10 days.
Jesus. So what have you been up to lately? I've been noticing, you know, you've been, it seems like you've been all over the place, like doing a lot of traveling. What's the Jason T. Smith tour been like?
You know, the last couple of years, it's always been that way. I started to realize that I was going out around the country about twice a month, every month, some for work, some for pleasure, some for a combo. And the train seems to be still going because I was just in Palm Springs last week. And then I have a road trip coming up in 2 weeks. Can I talk about that?
Yeah, talk about whatever.
Sure. All right, well, I'll talk about whatever. Let's talk about my shower today. So I went in the shower. No,
yeah.
Kidding.
How was it? Were you naked?
Yeah, I was, matter of fact.
Fantastic.
I normally shower with a full three-piece suit on, but today I was naked because I got hot working in the garage. No, I'm doing a little road trip, and I decided to call it Thriftapalooza. I know it's not that most original of names, but it sounded pretty good. And I do a weekly talk show on YouTube with my friend Nadine's called Thrifty Business with J&A, a show that you've been on.
Yes.
And our one-year anniversary is coming up in 2 weeks. And so I said, hey, let's do a one anniversary show. Let's make it special. So our favorite thrift store in the whole country is in Philadelphia where Nadine lives. It's called Philly AIDS Thrift. So on June 3rd is the start of my Thriftapalooza tour. June 3rd, we're doing a live show. So that's a Friday afternoon from the store. We're going to have a live studio audience. We're going to be talking, we're going to be hopefully touring the store within the show. So I got to work on getting everything mobile and going around the store. So that's the first stop. The next day, we're teaching a class in Philly. That got sold out. June 6th, though, I move on to that. Then I start driving. Because here's what's nutty to me. I wanted to fly from Philly to Pittsburgh. So if you're listening to this and you don't know Pennsylvania, they're about 5 hours apart. It's a straight shot. No big deal. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to fly to Pittsburgh. I'm going to pick up a car. I'm going to finish the tour. The only nonstop flight to Castle Ground cost one way, cost $411.
Wow.
Every other flight, you had to fly all the way from, now if you don't know the area, look at a map because you'll see how ridiculous this is. You have to fly from Philly to Chicago back to Pittsburgh. So I'm like, screw it. I'm going to drive. It'll be a little driving tour. So on June 6th, I'm doing a class in Pittsburgh, and there are still a couple slots left in that. And then I pop up to visit my folks in Cleveland. I got a class June 8th, but that is sold out. And then, and the reason I kind of started all this, I got hired to speak in Port Huron, which is a little bit north of Detroit. And they're having their huge community garage sale where the entire town comes together. They have this huge convention center, and they just set up table, rows and rows of tables. So everyone's selling their stuff. So I'm actually giving a speech on Thursday night, June 9th, about how to have the most badass garage sale you can have and make the most money from your crap. Your treasures.
And then I
teach a class in Detroit, June 10th, which still has some slots left. And then the June 11th is the end of my tour, and that is the day of the big community sale. So I'll be there shopping all day, looking for the deals, hanging out.
Basically, you're going to accumulate a couple of about a week's worth of cash. And then you're just going to hit this yard sale and double down.
You got it. So if anyone hears this and you're along that, besides, I mean, that's all fun to me, but in between, there is a tiki bar in every spot I'm going to. So we're going to be getting a little get together at a tiki bar. So if you are interested, if you hear this and you're interested in taking a thrift class from myself or coming to the big garage sale, drop me a note, tikipug@gmail.com. And I can get you all the details and info, but it's going to be fun. I'm going to see a lot of friends. I'm going to see a lot of fans. I'm going to see my folks. Going to see my nieces, and I'm going to thrift. And the weather should shake up to be good in about 2 weeks, and it should be a full driving trip.
So, with your live show in Philadelphia, were they pretty cool with you guys coming in? Were they excited to hear that you wanted to do it there?
Well, it was funny, and here's how this all played out. So they, Billy H. Thrift has their main store, which is huge and two stories. And then they have the secondary store. And so last time I was in Philly, Nadine goes, "Hey, we should go to the secondary store." And I went, "What? I've been to Philly like 1,000 times. We haven't gone to the secondary store yet." So we went over there. And while I'm there, the girl who rang me out earlier in the day at the big store said she came in to shop and she saw me. She goes, "Hey, were you on TV?" I go, "Yeah." She goes, "Oh, just after I rang you out, everybody's like, oh, that was the guy from Thrift Hunters." And she was like, "Oh, no way." So the guy behind the counter kind of runs both stores because there's a foundation. They raise money for AIDS research, and they give out free AIDS tests and all kinds of cool stuff like that. And he said, "Oh, that's so cool." So we just started chit-chatting, and kind of the same time, we had the same idea. "Hey, we should do a live show from your store. Hey, you want to do a live show from our store sometime?" So I said, "Sure, next time I'm in town, let's do a live show." And then I got hired to speak in Port Huron. And then I decided to start the week before in Philly. And so I just put it all together and it all kind of fell into place. So that's kind of their idea, kind of my idea. But it's a great, great store. It is the most unique and the thrift store that has the most character of any thrift store in the country that I've been in.
So when I saw the first post of you guys doing that, I just thought of, because you said it's in there, in the furniture section. I can just imagine everybody turning couches around and then, old chairs tables. It's going to be great. I think it'll be a lot of fun.
That's what I want. And, we don't, if you ever listen to our show, we have a guest. Like Toomey was a guest one time. We don't have a specific guest. We are going to have somebody from Philly AIDS Thrift come talk about their mission and how they run their store. But we have a live studio audience, and I think all of them are sellers, and most of them are our friends. So I think I'm just going to have a few of them pop in and, maybe give some tricks. It'll be a little bit different show than the norm, but it should be cool, and we're going to plan some fun. And we're also raising money for them. Everybody that's coming to be in the studio audience is donating $20 to the cause. So besides fun and shenanigans, we're also doing good.
Oh yeah, definitely. That's the best part of the whole thing. So, we'll get back to all this stuff, fun stuff later, but other stuff that you posted on Facebook lately, you posted a great picture of you and Guar. So please tell me how that happened.
So I, before I became thrifter extraordinaire, I worked in many, many, CD stores and for a few different chains. And, my first foray into working in the music stores, usually you start music stores when you're a kid. And mine was kind of different. I already had a career. I was married. I was pushing 30. And my career, although fun and exciting, because my career was sizing cheerleaders for their uniforms. So although fun and exciting, it was a lot of driving because I didn't live in the territory I owned, so to speak. And so I had to drive always like an hour and a half to get to the territory. Then the territory was like 4 hours by 4 hours. And so there was a point, and this is before satellite radio and smartphones, so it's just a lot of boring driving. So and when you work with anything within the school systems, Christmas time, there's nothing to do because everyone's on break. So one Christmas, they were looking for extra help at my local CD store. I'm like, oh, I could make a couple bucks, and pretty much all I wanted was a discount for Christmas because we had nice music, we had video games, we had video game systems, we had it all. And so I'm thinking, sweet, I'll do some Christmas shopping, I'll get this nice discount. And I was already a music junkie, and I fell in love with working at the store. So I said, hey, I'd like to come work. And there was a whole chain. They had stores in Detroit, Cleveland, and Pittsburgh, and they had 11 stores. I said, I'd like to come work for you, but I got to come right as a man in management because I'm married to her. I have a career. I don't want to leave a career. It's just a kid at the counter. So I said, sure. So we did a lot of in-stores, and Guar was one of my favorites. It was winter time, And the store we did it at was of the chain. It was the perfect store with the right clientele, but it had the smallest back room of any store. So they pulled up behind the building in a van and dressed like you and I are right now, just t-shirts, shorts, jeans, and they weren't guar yet, you know? So they came in the back door, and my job, being the biggest guy that worked at the store, was to guard the door till they were ready. So they come in, they bring all their gear in, and I wasn't expecting this part of it, but they all just drop trout to get into like loincloths and stuff. So yeah, I've seen pretty much everyone at Guar's dick. So
there you go.
Yeah, wasn't expecting that, but it was amazing because not a lot of people get to see that, to see the transformation from normal dudes to full on Guar. I got to see it from start to finish. So that was pretty neat. And, I was like, wow, that was awesome. And forgive me because I don't know all their names. And this guy's not been in the band, I don't think, for a long time. But the guy with the big wrench on his hand.
Okay.
He couldn't fit through the door to go to the store. So he had to go outside in his loincloth, and it was snowing, and walk around the building and then come back in the front door. So that's kind of how the in-store started. And, you know, tons of kids came, autographs and pictures. And then the funniest part was, in-store's over, everyone's left, we've closed up, but Guar's still shopping, and we had a cassette section, and back then, cassettes were only selling for like $1, and we should have pulled these out, but one guy from Guar looks in the cassette section, he goes, oh man, there's a whole Guar section for $1. I'm like, oh yeah. Damn, stupid, we should have pulled those out and put them away.
God, the old classic dollar bin for the cassette section. You know, you could always find Faith No More's Angel Dust. Like any of those like bins, Faith No More's Angel Dust was always in the dollar section, and I probably bought that album 20 times.
Oh yeah, but yeah, and I gotta tell you, dude, I did tons of in stores because I ended up working for Tower Records too, and then I worked for one of the biggest independents in the country called Fingerprints of Long Beach. So I did in stores with tons of people. Some were assholes, and then most were very nice. And Guar was definitely one of those that, although they had this persona, you know, they took care of every kid that came to see them. They were super nice to me, and you know, and you know, obviously they're not Mariah Carey, so you wouldn't expect diva antics, but they were just very cool and chill. So it was majority of my in stores I did were a lot of fun and like that.
Who else did you do in stores with?
I tell you, one of the nicest guys ever in rock and roll is Jack Johnson. Now, I know your show isn't about that type of music, but for those of you who know who Jack Johnson is, he had just come out. Brushfire Fairy Tales was his first album. He wasn't even on my, even though we were having the in-store, he wasn't even on my radar yet. I wasn't listening to him, and I had no clue how big he was going to be. And Fingerprints, this was at Fingerprints of Long Beach, we could hold like, I don't know, 50 or 70 kids in our store, and 700 showed up.
Wow.
And we caught us off guard. The police showed up. The police helicopter showed up. And I got into a fight with the cops because they were getting all pissed at us. And I'm like, well, we didn't know this many kids were going to show up. But Jack Johnson, if you don't know, is very mellow, kind of Hawaiian vibe pop. And that's how his fans are. They're all very mellow, just be mellow. And so here's 700 kids standing around in a line around the building, all just very nice and quiet. And the cops, you know, it's like they were giving me grief like it was Slayer fans 20 years ago. And I was like, I've never seen a line of 700 be this quiet and this polite. Are you kidding me right now? And the cop's like, well, there's going to be trash. And I could see like one Starbucks cup on the ground. I'm like, I'll pick it up when they're gone. But here's where Jack was so cool. He had to go to San Diego, which is about 2.5 hours or 2 hours from Long Beach, for a dinner at his aunt's house. And we had to shoo away hundreds of kids because we just couldn't accommodate them. And he ended up playing two sets. So we crammed like 150 kids in, and then he played a set, and then we switched them out, another 150 in, and he played a second set, and he signed autographs for every single person. And he didn't leave Long Beach till 10 o'clock, and he was supposed to be at his aunt's at like 8 or something. So that was very impressive and nice, and, you know, he didn't sign up for that, but he didn't let it affect it, you know, so...
Jesus. So
and I did in stores with Disturbed, and they were super cool. And I'm trying to drive back to your normal listeners.
No, my listeners are, well, there'll be some of your fans on here too, so it'll be all good. Which, you know, I don't know your clientele.
I will tell you who the one I hate the most, the douchiest band I ever did an in-store with. I threw them out of the store. That's how douchey they were. AFI. You know AFI?
Yeah. Well, I actually listened to AFI today.
Okay, so they show up, and I forgot. So here's what happened to me. I got the, you know, it was kind of fun, kind of not. When I went to work for Tower, I ended up working at Tower in Hollywood on Sunset Boulevard. So back in the day when new releases were a big deal and people had to wait in line to buy them instead of downloading, music came out on Tuesdays. And what we did was we closed at 11:59 on Monday night. And we reopened at 12:01, so it was technically Tuesday, and we'd sell CDs. And at least two, if not all 4 weeks a month, we would have some band there sign in or playing or whatever. And so on Monday nights, I would work till like 3 o'clock in the morning. So AFI's there, and we do their new CD. I can't remember which one it was, but they're all vegans. They were all being douchey about where their veggie trays were. And then like, it's done. Everybody had bought something and they wanted to stay in the store and talk to their fans. And I'm like, no, I'm going home. Please get out. No, dude, we're the band. I don't give a shit who you are. There's no one buying anything else anymore. There's no reason for us to be open. Goodbye. You want to talk to your fans? We have a big parking lot. Go out there. So they were just annoying beyond belief. And I'm like, I will never do an AFI in-store again.
Yeah, I had actually worked at Hot Topic for a little while, and we did a few in-stores. And, you know, the band that, man, I don't even know if I want to, like, put them out on the podcast or not. But, yeah, they like, you know, were just complete asses. And, Chris Kale, Five Finger Death Punch, did an in-store with us, and they were just, like, sending us all for, like, Starbucks coffees, like, you know, down the hall in the mall. And, like, one of our, like, the sweetest, you know, managers we had, they made like, this brass knuckle cupcake cake kind of deal. And, you know, like, none of them, they didn't even, like, touch it. And it was not a very pleasant thing. But, you know, since then, I've met, you know, like, the Matt Snell, the original bass player. And he's actually turned out to be the sweetest guy possible. And, obviously, Chris is up pretty cool now. But the rest of the guys just seem to kind of, I don't know what was going on with them that day, but yeah, it was pretty rough in store.
Yeah, and luckily I didn't have many, and you know, we had a lot of good ones. And I started at Tower in Westwood, which was UCLA, and there we had three floors, so we had a lot of performances. So they weren't like huge bands, but for a while Andy Dick had a band, so we had his band in, and they performed, and it was a lot of fun. And there's a small band, a stoner band on a small label that has national prominence, named Sasquatch, and they're friends of ours, and they played, they did a lot of in-stores for us, and they were awesome. Go check them out. I guarantee you will like it. They're really heavy, kind of sludgy. They're awesome.
Nice. So what's your Slayer story you have here?
Oh, well, I was going to tell you, I do have a Five Finger Death Punch story. So since you just mentioned
All right, let's
that,
go with that one.
Yeah, let's go with
All
that right. one. So about 4 or 5 years ago, I live in Vegas, and UFC is based out of Vegas, and they were having a big UFC event. A whole weekend there was a fight and a fan expo, and fighters going to be everywhere. And so they hired Five Finger Death Punch to play at the Mandalay Bay Pool. There's this giant, giant stage, Mandalay Bay Pool, for those who've never been here, is a huge, huge wave pool. And there's a big stage in the middle, and they have concerts all summer, every summer, huge bands. And so what you do is you grab a drink, you stand in the pool, you watch music. It's awesome. So Five Finger Death Punch is playing. My wife and I are sitting at the edge of the pool with our feet dangling, just having cocktails. Chuck Liddell's there, all these fighters. So think about it. Five Finger Death Punch, aggressive band. Their name, Five Finger Death Punch. UFC fighters. Okay, great concert. Nothing bad happens. No fights, no arrests, nothing. Peaceful. 6 days later, I'm at the House of Blues, and I am seeing Tenacious D. In case you don't know who Tenacious D is, it is two comedians, Jack Black and Kyle Glass, and they play acoustic guitars, and they kind of rock out, but it's comedic acoustic rock. Five songs into the concert, the dude standing next to me gets stabbed, concert over. And not stabbed like, ooh, I got a little cut, like stabbed like the pool of blood had to be guarded by six sheriffs, and they threw everyone out of the venue. Jesus. I'm like, what? I'm like, how in the world do you go to Five Finger Death Punch and nothing happens? and you go to Tenacious D and a stabbing breaks out. And where we were the furthest from the door, so we had to wait for all these people to file out. Tickets were $85, no refunds. And I was kind of drunk, and I thought the sheriffs would enjoy my humor while they were guarding a pool of blood. They didn't. Because the one guy was like 4 or 5 inches taller than me, and I'm like, wow, you're tall. I don't normally feel dainty, but I do to you. And I kind of batted my eyes, and yeah, he didn't think it was funny. So the moral of the story, kids, is 500 Death Punch, not a problem. Go to Tenacious D, you might get stabbed.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy when you go to some sort of mellow show and something crazy breaks out. You know, it's so insane. But
I've never seen that much blood outside of a body ever. That's how crazy it was.
Wow. Were you trying to, did you see were you near the stabbing when it happened?
Yeah, I didn't see the actual stabbing, but when I turned,
yeah,
because of course the commotion started, it was next to me. There was maybe a person in between me and the fight. That's how close it was. And I had not that I talked 4 friends in, but I said, hey, who wants to go to see Tenacious D? So because of me, I had 4 other people there who basically paid $85 to see 4.5 songs. And Jack Black came out and said, we have to end the show, sheriffs say so. But that was kind of bullshit on the House of Blues part to not refund our money.
Yeah, that's pretty rough. I mean, I guess, you know, 4.5 songs, 4.5 songs is half a set, you know, depending on how many songs they're going to play.
Yeah.
All that other stuff. But yeah, that's definitely rough. And plus, you know, you're like, hey, let's go out and see Tenacious D. It's going to be a blast or a lot of fun to see live, and it's going to be all kinds of fun. And
yeah, and that was our mindset. That's why I was a little drunky. I was just having a good time. I was with all my boys. You know, it was just like one of those nights where, like, oh, what a perfect Vegas night. Oh, over. Stabbing done. Wah, wah. And that's why we can't have nice things.
Yeah, I mean, if you went to the Five Finger Death Punch show and a stabbing broke out, and your friends would be like, oh, this was great.
Yeah.
Exactly, all the violence and everything happened.
It was so weird. They're only 5 days apart. And it just, you know, obviously the opposite of what you expected.
Right. And you know, also at a Slayer show, I would assume a stabbing at a Slayer show is probably not too far-fetched either.
So I want to preface I got 2 Slayer stories. I'm going to preface it with, please don't hate me. I'm not a huge Slayer fan. I do not hate them. But I was never a huge fan. I would not, you know, search them out to go see them. But we did a Slayer in-store back when I was in Cleveland. We had one of our stores that was just straight-up metal all the time. Like, we barely sold anything but metal. So that was one of our biggest. We had everybody get in line. Kerry King gave me shit about my tattoos.
Those are some of the worst tattoos.
Yeah, he had a Marvin the Martian watch on, and I had my one and only tattoo at the time, my 18-year-old Marvin the Martian on my upper arm. It's since been covered, but he goes, I go, oh, hey, nice watch. And I had my tattoo kind of out, and he goes, well, I'm not that obsessed. I'm like, dude, seen your tattoos? But it was a crazy in-store because the fans who showed up, normal Slayer fans, and this one chick goes, I'll show my boobs if you let me get in line. And we could tell we didn't want to see him. And we're all like, no, as she showed him. Like, now you're going to go to the back of the line. We said no. I tell you something. And I'm a boob dude, so let me tell you, when I say no, I don't want to see him. So that night, though, we go to the concert. Now, I've never seen Slayer. Like I said, I know him. Don't hate him. Just don't, you know, don't really care all that much. And this was 1998, 1999, somewhere in there. And I think it was a Seasons in the Abyss album.
Nice.
And so they weren't at their heyday, and they're playing a place called the Odeon in downtown Cleveland. The Odeon only holds 800. It's basically a square box with a bar on the side and a bar in the back and then a VIP area in the back. And so this unknown opening act, and because we did the in-store, we were all in the VIP area hanging out with the bands. They had 2 opening acts. Clutch was the middle act, and I was already a huge Clutch fan. I just love Clutch to death. But the other opening act was the Nobodies. They were a little band called System of a Down. Have you ever heard of them?
Nice.
They were Nobodies.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we were hanging out with Clutch, and And so basically, I blew off System of a Down. They were trying to hang out with us, and they were like, hey, I heard you guys did a good in-store with Slayer. I'm like, yeah, whatever. Hey, where's Neil from Clutch?
Yeah, exactly.
So Slayer starts, and I go out, and their stage show and their performance is like we're in an arena for 20,000, and we're in a square box room of 800.
Yeah.
The riser for the drum kit was so tall. I'm like, what? This is crazy for this tiny, tiny room. And watch the show. They were good. Did not change my opinion. Like, I don't need to go search out Slayer or anything. So cut to, we did an in-store with the band Scrape. You know the band Scrape?
Yeah, I remember them.
So we did an in-store with Scrape, and I was working in Long Beach. And so Scrape and Static X were opening for Slayer. And Slayer's back to now playing big arenas. And so we go, because I had free tickets. But I was a big Static X fan, so my wife and I were like, all right, let's go see Scrape, because we like Scrape, and Static X, and then we'll split. So we watched Scrape, we watched Static X. Now, of course, who leaves before the headliner of any concert?
Right.
So we're trying to get out, and there's no exit at this point, because everyone's still coming in. And so this little old black man's taking tickets, and I go, dude, where's the exit? And he goes, what do you mean, where's the exit? I go, I want to get out. He goes, there's no ins and outs here. I go, oh, I know. He goes, what? He goes, don't you want to see Slayer? I said, nope. And he patted me on the back and said, good for you. I'm like, oh, you're not a Slayer fan. So he stopped his ins and let us exit. And that was the extent of my hanging out with Slayer. But we did hang out with them in the VIP room. They were very cool guys. Like I said, I don't have anything bad against them. It just, they never did much for me.
What venue was that again where you saw Static X and Slayer?
So that was at the Long Beach Arena. That was the Long Beach's. They had some crazy riots when AC/DC played in like 70, and they outlawed music there for like 30 years. And it was such a weird thing. It's like no dancing in Footloose. So when we lived in Long Beach, like the law finally lifted. I'm like, why wouldn't they rescind this earlier? They're missing out on so much money, because the second the law got lifted, they start booking all these big shows, because a band can play Anaheim, they can play Long Beach, they can play L.A. all in the same tour, because L.A. is so big and vast, you can play three venues within, as a crow flies, 20 miles of each other, and fill them all up.
Yeah, I think when I had Tony Campos on of Static X, I think he was talking about that was one of the shows, like one of his highlight shows of his entire career, because he grew up around the Long Beach Arena, and he said like when he got a chance to actually play there, it like blew his mind.
Yeah, yeah. One night we were there for, I think it was either Weezer as a headliner or Blink-182, and whatever the opening act, a little pop punk band, whatever it was, we came out to go potty. And we saw Bob Saget of Full House fame. And Bob has a couple kids. And Bob's kids, who were like probably like, you know, preteens at the time, they had a friend or two each. So Bob was the only parent with like six preteens. And so he stood between the two bathrooms. And he's like, all right, girls, there's the girls' bathroom. Boys, there's the boys. Dad'll be right here. And poor Bob just wanted to be dad that moment. And all the drunks, while he was waiting for his kids, like, Bob fucking Saget, no way, dude. And they kept, like, high-fiving him and Full House. And I actually felt, all those rare times I felt bad for a celebrity. I'm like, he just wants to be a good dad right now and keep an eye on his kids. And the drunks of the concert will not let him do that.
Well, I know he's had a past with alcohol himself, and I always had a friend that told me the story about he was in the bathroom, and they were at a Monster Magnet show, and Monster Magnet was like, this next song is, and Bob was at the urinal with his drink. He's like, suck my dick. Like, just screamed it out. Like, I'll just never forget that. So he's had his moments, too. He'll be fine.
Oh, yeah. But it was weird and funny to witness that.
Have you seen the documentary? Have we talked about that?
Yeah, I saw it. I was actually in L.A. Over Halloween weekend, this past Halloween, when it came out. So I, my wife and I were heading out to Palm Springs for a week, and I said, oh, I want to see this in the theater in L.A. because I used to work for him in L.A. And it's one of those documentaries that made me sad and mad, because one of the reasons I stopped working for him was a management change, and then it was already on the decline, which I didn't know that much at the time. But, yeah, what a bummer. They really screwed that up. That, you know, it was great to see the history, and they should still be here. They should have changed with the times a lot quicker, because I see the record stores I frequent in L.A., in Vegas, in Phoenix, in San Francisco, they're doing quite fine. And if Tower would have just changed with the times a little bit, I think they'd still be here.
Yeah, was the some of the facts in that, I mean, were, from what you could tell, was a pretty accurate.
Yeah, you know, because especially since I worked in Westwood, and then I worked over at Sunset, and from everything I knew, and I was only there about a year, it was pretty much dead on. And I knew a couple people in the movie. I don't know them anymore, but people I worked with, it was pretty much dead on. But yeah, what a bummer. It just they built that great empire, and then it was just kind of fell apart.
Yeah, it seemed like a lot of bad decisions towards the end there, and there was like that classic thing on there where they were talking about the digital thing and how it wouldn't affect them and everything else. It was pretty crazy how they didn't foresee the future.
Yeah, and they tried, because when I started for them, and oddly enough, I have pugs and I love pugs. They changed the name of Tower Westwood to Pugs with a Z because that's edgy. And they decided to add used music. And, the margins in used from a store standpoint are huge. You know, you pay a couple bucks for a CD, you turn around and sell it for 10. That's way better than when you're buying new. And they did it, but they didn't do it well enough. And had I been more in tune what was happening, I would have been like, try to push it a little more, because if they hadn't done it well, incorporate all the stores. You've never been to Amoeba in LA, have you?
No, I've actually seen photos, but I've never actually been.
I mean, Amoeba's amazing. I shop at Amoeba. I've done like a 6-hour shopping spree in Amoeba. And that could have been Tower. That absolutely could have been Tower. They should have been more up on getting into, graphic novels, the toys, the games, all the little tchotchkes that you find in record stores now. Those are the kind of things that keep them afloat, because they're not just reliant on music and movies. You can go in there and buy, like, Captain America socks, Funko Pop, Ant-Man, all that fun stuff. And, that would have definitely kept them afloat, and having a good used section.
Yeah, growing up in Tennessee, I worked for The Great Escape, which, if you're in Nashville, the Nashville area, The Great Escape is, one of those, like, staples of the city. Very, very cool used record store, and kind of growing up in that atmosphere, and then getting hired there in the late 90s to work for a while, and getting to see all the great stuff kind of come through. And I still have a passion for that, I would love to still have a used record store, and just to have the bins and bins of vinyl, and the bins and bins of old comics and things like that. Just the smell and everything. It's just such a cool place, man. And I kind of wish there were more places like that.
Yeah, and that's I am definitely blessed to live in this part of the country, because I'm in LA every couple months, and there are stores. I have a whole little circle I run around LA to hit all the stores. I want to get to San Francisco to see friends. There's a chain called Rasputin, and there's 2 Amoebas up there. I hit all those, and I just pick up tons of good stuff. I pick up stuff I'm looking for. I pick up stuff I need. I pick up stuff I want to flip. And then you just run, because you're shopping and you're touching. You run across new and different stuff that you would like, oh, this looks cool. I buy a lot on visuals alone, and then hope. But right. Because I sell online, there's no fear, because I can usually, at minimum, flip it for what I paid. So I'm out nothing if it stinks. But a lot of times I've been surprised, and I've ended up with music I've liked. And I'm like, so glad I grabbed that.
So, hey, actually, a little while back, you went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. How was that? How was, any good stories from that?
Well, good in a bad way. So, this year's class included NWA and Cheap Trick and Steve Miller Band and Deep Purple and Chicago. And like all those bands, but I had just seen the Straight Outta Compton movie. I was a big, big early rap fan. I loved NWA. And they were getting inducted, and I was like, oh, I told my wife, I go, we have to go near, we love New York City, and it was the ceremony was in Brooklyn. I go, we have to go to New York for essentially three live songs, because all the bands who get inducted who are still alive mm-hmm. play. And so the movie was a hit. There's no way they're not going to play. We book a 9 or 10 day trip to New York. We get to the hotel. We unpack the first news story we catch, and we flip the TV on. NWA will not be performing at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because of some beef with the producers. And at first I'm like, a bunch of jerks. They're too big for their britches. And then Steve Miller had a serious problem with the producers. So now I'm starting to think, who's ever running the event and or the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, they've got some issues. Because, you know, what NWA, they were trying to be more veiled about it and not be such pointing the finger. But Steve Miller came out guns a-blazing.
He went all crazy.
Yeah. And so, based on the stuff that Ice Cube was saying, like, I'm catching that was the same problem. Like, you got to sign the music away. You have no rights to it. And they're going to do whatever they want. And, oh, hey, you get a ticket. But if your wife wants to come or, your the person, your band's wife, that's $10,000. That's where Steve Miller was like, what? So, you know, we saw the concert. It was still a great show. Barclay Center is kind of a cool place. It was a lot of fun. But to back up, my wife and I went to the opening concert for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame 20-plus years ago. And the concert was so long, we took a nap in our seats. The concert ended up being like 9 or 9.5 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. It was one of those where they just didn't figure out how long each band was going to play and what their set was going to be like. So it kind of meandered. And there was a point where I kind of woke up and looked at her and I realized I was asleep. She was asleep. And we weren't drunk. We were just tired. It was in the old Cleveland Municipal Stadium, which had the worst rickety old 1930s seats. And, you know, Springsteen was one of like 20 bands that played, and he did a full Springsteen concert, and there was 19 other bands.
Wow.
Yeah, long show.
long show.
Yeah. So that's my career with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame shows.
Can we talk about your possibilities of another show again, or anything going on with that?
Nothing. I did have a meeting in New York City with a producer, and. It was a good positive meeting. There's nothing specific that has come out of it as of yet, but there are discussions and talks, and, you know, we'll see. I mean, I would like to get back on TV. If it happens, cool. If it doesn't, you know, I was there once. I was happy to have done it. I got two good seasons out of it, and I thoroughly enjoyed every moment of it, and I really enjoyed the people who enjoyed it. And so when they see me, they smile. And to me, it's a lot of work, dude, to make a TV show, and it was all worth it to see people smile.
You were talking earlier about being at the Philly AIDS thrift and the guy or the lady behind the counter asking if you were the guy from TV. I mean, are you still kind of getting that in that circle of, thrifters and resellers and stuff? Are you still getting recognized as the guy from Thrift Hunters?
Oh, yeah. And my last episode aired in December of 2014. So it's been a year and a half, and people still walk up and say, hey. Everywhere around the country, some people know exactly it's me, and then some people will hold their phone to my face with a picture of me and go, is that you?
Right here, is this you?
Yeah, but and it's been 99% positive. I'm like, hey man, nice to meet you. And it just happened, my wife and I were going to see Captain America, and in Vegas, most of the movie theaters are in casinos, so we get there a little bit early, we play a little video poker before we go in. And the second I put my $20 bill in and I played my first hand, the guy walks over and goes, you're the dude from Thrift Hunters, aren't you? I'm like, yeah. So he talked to me for 20 minutes, and I gave him a postcard for my YouTube show, and he messaged me right away. And he said, oh, I'm so glad you're doing another show. I love it. So, yeah, I still get recognized, and I still enjoy every moment of people wanting to say hi.
That's awesome. And so what do you do? Like, did eBay reach out to you and like, hey, let's, you know, have you do some speaking at these engagements, things like that?
Yeah, I've been speaking for and with eBay for a long, long time. And it started with I had started to stand out in the community only because I'm a big guy. I'm vocal. And many moons ago, they had a buyers panel. So when they do these events, they'll grab four buyers. They'll throw them on the panel. And they'll interview them for an hour. And, like, you know, so what they're doing is they're having all these sellers hear four different buyers, how they expected the stuff to be shipped, what they expect from the seller. And then they had me then do a seller panel next, and then another seller panel. And then they've sent me to Congress twice. They've had me talk to their summer interns. They've had me relaunch their bulletin board. So they've had me do a lot of stuff. And then when they had their big 20th birthday celebration this past fall, They picked 20 of the biggest eBay influencers on the platform, and what they were looking for, not the biggest sellers, but people who are big on social media that have a presence, and I was honored to be one of those 20. And now there's a big event coming up in Vegas in July, and I'm pretty sure we'll be used again for that, so I'll be involved in helping spread the love.
Fantastic, man. Well, it was great talking to you again, man. I haven't talked to you in a while. I need to catch up more often, do this more often, and just, you know, all of the wonderful things you do with your thrifting board. How many members are you up to now? 11, 12,000?
We're a little over 12,000, 12,300. So, and we just started in August. So we're not even a year old. We're 10 months or not even 10 months old yet. And we've added 12,000 people. So it's been awesome.
And how can everybody find all of your wonderful things?
Many places. You can always drop me an email. I'm happy to help with anything. TikiPug@gmail.com, TikiPug. My Facebook group is The Thrifting Board. So just basically go to Facebook and search for The Thrifting Board. And then I'm easily found on Facebook, facebook.com/TikiPug. See how easy I make all this? I put it all together. And I do have a fan page for my weekly show. It's Thrifty Business with Jay and A. We're normally on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Every once in a while, we have to switch to a Wednesday, but you can find us very easily. And then I still have a Thrift Hunters fan page on Facebook where I post, you know, the Thriftapalooza things on there. So while I'm bouncing around the country, I post it on there. Before you blow me off, though, I wanted to share the Slipknot story. That was the reason we...
Oh, yeah.
We even get to the story that you're like, hey, you want to tell the Slipknot story?
All right, let's talk Slipknot.
So, back up to when I was working for the chain of CD stores in Cleveland, most of your fans, and you will know a band called Mushroomhead. So back then, Mushroomhead was just a local Cleveland band that made a ton of money. They had a huge, huge following. Every CD they put out, they would sell anywhere from 10 to 20,000 copies. They had sweatshirts. They had T-shirts. They had calendars. They had all these side projects. They have a rap group called 10,000 Cadillacs. They had another side band called 216, which is the Cleveland area code. And we worked directly with them because we were their main set of stores where they sold their products. So we'd always have meetings with them, and they dressed up in masks in each member, and they were a band of, at the time, about 8 or 9 members. Each member had a different mask, and they had jumpsuits with barcodes on the back. And so I've been working with them for about a year, and we did in-stores, and I see their success. I'm like, even though they're small, they're making bank there because they're selling a ton of product in a very small circle, basically, just the Cleveland area, maybe a little Pittsburgh, a little Detroit, a little Toledo. But they're doing good. So Roadrunner comes courting them, and they're like, all right, we want to sign you. We'll pay you $1 a CD. And the leader's like, dude, I'm making 9 a CD right now. Granted, I'm, you know, not selling as much, but there's a lot of members in this band. We can't do $1 a CD. So they're like, okay. And they said Roadrunner everything, their sweatshirts, their calendars, everything. So cut to a little time later, I'm working at the heavy metal store, the one in Parma. And we, you know, you always get all this stuff from record labels, the new free. And this is back when we were giving out free singles to break new bands.
Nice.
So I open up this package of singles, and I go to put them out on the table for freebies. And I said to my buddy who was standing next to me, oh, Mushroomhead's got a new release. And then I looked again. I go, well, why is Mushroomhead called Slipknot now? So there's this feeling that Slipknot just ripped everything off of Mushroomhead. So I had no knowledge of them before this, but that's how much they looked identical. I thought it was Mushroomhead. And wow. So I read it and I'm like, this is weird. And so had some talks with my boss and with the guys from Mushroomhead, and it got to a nutty point where, all right, so Slipknot's going on as their first national tour. They're the opening act of a 3 or 4 bill act, and the headliner's Machine Head. I think we saw Machine Head, Biohazard, and Slipknot. So we have this venue down in Cleveland on the river. It's just metal bleachers, big open pit, stage, and right behind the stage is the river. So it's kind of a nice setting. And my wife and I happen to be sitting on the top row of the bleachers, and we could see the tour buses parked right below us. And so, and this was pre 9/11. So security walking into concerts, like, you can bring flasks in, nothing, Nobody cares. So Mushroomhead fans are pissed. They think this band has totally ripped off their band, and they all came to the concert with their socks full of D batteries. Yeah. Now, I don't know this. I mean, I'm just as confused because I felt that Slipknot ripped off Mushroomhead's look, and I didn't know about the battery thing until Slipknot starts, and I just see projectiles coming out of the pit, just fast and furious. And during that show, there was never a moment where all the guys of Slipknot were on the stage. There was always someone in the crowd fighting. It would dive off the stage because, you know, they're getting pelted with D batteries.
Wow.
And I looked at my wife, Stacey, I go, this is so nuts because here's what's going to happen. Those nine dudes are going to finish their set, take off their masks. None of us know what they look like. This is way before social media, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Late 90s. I go, they're going to come back and beat the shit out of everybody that threw batteries at them. And guess what happened? The set's over. They go backstage, disrobe out of their jumpsuits with barcodes. That's why it was so crazy how exact this was. They came back, and next thing you know, in between bands, the pit's just full of activity because it's a full-on brawl. Everybody's Slipknot's in the pit fighting everyone, their crew. It just went apeshit. And so we watched everybody Slipknot get arrested, their crew. The cops took over their tour buses because we were on the top row watching all this happen. So we could see the front of us, which was the pit, and we could see behind us, which was the tour buses. So they arrested them. They took them all back to the tour bus. They went through all their tour buses. And it got nutty. But and since then, Mushroomhead said we got no beef. But I still think there's some, I believe because I was there front center for that whole kind of period, I believe there were some shenanigans that went on somewhat. I don't know what to what level, but that's how close they looked alike at the time.
Yeah, it was pretty rough. I mean, I remember, obviously, I was big into the metal scene at the time, and I remember Mushroomhead, and then I remember Slipknot kind of coming out too, but it was a little pre-social media, so, I mean, you didn't really know. I mean, obviously, you knew, but, I mean, someone in Nashville growing up, we didn't know who came first. You know, was Mushroomhead come first? Did Slipknot come first? Did they, you know, like minds, think alike kind of thing, you know, just a few towns over, all that stuff. But actually, I went and saw Mushroomhead, I guess that was last week, or Monday. Because Billy Gray is in one of the opening bands, so I went and did an actual sit down with him and Madam Mayhem, the lady he's out playing with right now. And so I got to see Mushroomhead. I'd never seen him before. It was pretty fun. I mean, it was, you know, pretty rough crowd on a Monday night in Louisville, but yeah, it was a fun show.
Yeah, we just saw him 4 months ago at the Hard Rock here, and look, they're nothing alike anymore. Look, I was there, so people can say bullshit all you want. I was there. I worked with them. I saw them, grow and get bigger, and then I saw what looked just like them. So, you know, there is something there. But yeah, it was probably one of the craziest concerts. Even though I wasn't involved in it, I saw the melee go on. I'm like, it's like a soccer match in Europe, just going apeshit. I mean, that's what it looked like.
Right.
A lot of bleeding, a lot of arrests, and of course, the cops didn't know anything about it, so they weren't, like, extra staffed. And this, like I said, before 9/11, when security really got beefed up everywhere. I mean, back in those days, too, I mean, we went to, I think it was the first Lollapalooza at a place called Blossom. It's this great outdoor venue in outside of Cleveland. And back then, to separate the lawn from the pavilion, it was just a rope. One single strand of rope. And for most concerts, the people who paid for pavilion got to sit in a lawn, and they crisscrossed. Man, the second Nine Inch Nails started, the entire lawn, which was 13,000 people, emptied into the pavilion, which only holds 5,000 people. So there's 18,000 people standing in the pavilion, and that's when concerts are like, we should probably have a better barriers around here. A little skinny rope just ain't gonna do nothing.
Little skinny rope.
Yeah, but I will say I'm a huge fan of Slipknot. I'm going to see them in 3 weeks, actually. And I'm a huge fan of Mushroomhead. My boy's from Cleveland, so I have no ill will to anybody. Just I saw it happen.
Yeah, no, it was definitely, you know, looking back and, you know, still to this day, it's, you know, I'm sure Mushroomhead, even, you know, if they were first, I put it this way. If I was in Mushroomhead and I thought of all this stuff first, quote-unquote first, and I put all the stuff out, and you know, I feel like Slipknot ripped me off even a small smidgen of rip-offedness. I think I would still, I would still to this day just be insanely just ill, you know, if that was me.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but.
You know, I mean, that's like basically when I come out with, you know, my thrifty company featuring, you know, Toomey and Steve, and I have basically the same thing, you know, very similar to what Thrifty Business with J&A is, you know.
Yep.
But, you know, like minds, right?
That would be funny, though. You know, maybe 1 week I'll do a Talk Toomey and you can do a Thrifty Business, see if we can fill each other's shoes.
Right. No, I definitely can't fill those large shoes there, sir. But you just have to talk to someone in, you know, Fear Factory. But I'm sure you'd do fine.
So what we should do, if you ever do make it out here, we'll rent a cabana at one of the pools, and we'll spend the day just drinking and having fun, and we'll do a live we'll do the podcast, we'll do an interview there.
Yeah,
at the pool.
Be fun. Just set up the mics between us.
Oh yeah, heck yeah! Because if you go to the pool like the Venetian, no way, that costs too much money. But some of the locals' places and some of the downtown places have these great, great pools. But you can rent a cabana for 12 for like 400 for the day, and it comes with a couple bottles of booze. That's cheap.
You know, I was thinking about something you said the other day. You were talking about, you know, when you came on the first time and you're like, you checked out the podcast, whatever. I've actually went back now and listened to those early episodes, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, what the hell was I doing? So it's funny. It's funny. You're like, yeah, I'll come on your podcast. I like it. I've taken down. I think the first six, I took those down. I'm going to kind of do some. I think the interviews themselves are pretty cool, but like the in between me just screaming into a mic stuff was really rough. And I listened to Colt Cabana's podcast, The Wrestler. He actually took down his first like 30 episodes because just he didn't want anyone to come across any of those episodes and think that that's what his podcast sounds like. So he took them down, and when he did like a year end review, he kind of used all that audio for that, but.
Yeah, we have a couple episodes that I should probably take down, but I'm a kind of a warts and all kind of guy.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the podcasts that I enjoy are typically end up being like that person's second podcast. Like they've cut their teeth doing something else, and then they've, you know, figured it out, and then they start something new. So, but you know, definitely got too much time and energy invested in this. I'm not going to change it up. So
no,
I thought co-host. That's the only thing I have thought. I've thought co-host, but other than that, but it is kind of hard because it's so branded my name.
Yeah, and you do a good job, and congrats on everybody you've had on the show, and the fact that your show gets quoted a lot. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's pretty insane.
That means you're reaching out. You know, you've got a reach, so that's pretty cool. So congratulations.
That fucking Jim Brewer episode, man, it took off. Like, it was stagnant there for a minute, and then once Blabbermouth and a few of those metal sites took it over, man, it freaked out. It was pretty crazy. It's by far my most downloaded episode.
Yeah, well, I can't compete with Brewer. Sorry, buddy.
Dude, he was a cool dude, man. You know, he was nice, and he was open, and he was just engaged, like, the entire time. He wasn't, wasn't big-timing me at all. It was pretty cool. Pretty cool to kind of talk to him on that level.
Yeah, it's cool. I never met Brewer, but he just always has that feel. You know, I've always been a fan, and just watched his last, I think it was an HBO special or Comedy Central special. When I hear him on other shows, too, I just, like, he has that feel that, you know. Well, plus, when you hear how much he's taking care of his parents as they got older and stuff. And,
yeah.
You know, when he puts that on Front Street and, like, that's not a diva. That is not a guy who is too big for his britches. That is a very much down-to-earth dude.
Absolutely, man. Well, I'm going to jump off here, and I will talk to you soon.
All right, brother.
All right, man. Take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Hey, this is Billy Gray with Fozzy and Cyberstar, and you are listening to the Talk To Me Podcast.
And if you want to support the Talk To Me podcast, make sure you are subscribed on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Podcast Addict, or however you get your podcast each and every week, and so you don't miss any single episode of the Talk To Me podcast. And also, if you want to support the podcast monetarily, head on over to patreon.com. Sign up as a supporter. Get some great, great extra content, bonus content each week, guest updates, ask the guest a question. A lot of great stuff over there, all the way up to a bonus podcast a month. So head over to patreon.com/talktome. Sign up as a supporter, and that will be much appreciated. And also head over to talktomepod.com, and that's a great place to check out all the podcasts, leave comments there, all that fun stuff. So a lot of great things out there. You can always head up. And yes, if you want to support this podcast monetarily, make sure to go to talktome on patreon.com at patreon.com/talktome. Again, thanks to Jason T. Smith for coming on the podcast. Always fun to have him on. Great guest to have. And hopefully you will check him out on the road, on the Thriftapalooza, as he says, and check him out each and every place that he goes on the world tour, the world Thriftapalooza tour that Jason T. Smith is on. So guys, until next Tuesday, to where my guest is to be announced. I've got a lot of great interviews this week. Going to decide which episode will come out first. And we'll let you guys know. And if you're on, if you're a Patreon supporter, you will know before everyone else. So make sure to head over there. And it's as little as like $1 a month, $3 a month. If we can do, everyone does the $3 a month thing, it would be so helpful for the podcast. Help out with production costs and all that other fun stuff. But I digress. I'm not going to hound you for money. So until next Tuesday, I am Joshua Toomey, and this has been the Talk Toomey podcast. You guys have a great week, and I will see you Tuesday.